U.S. college students get Google Gemini's Pro plan free for 1 year and use the best model in the world for multimodal understanding. So whether you're uploading a video to get feedback on your presentation, uploading a photo of your homework to ask for extra help, or transcribing notes from a lecture you missed, Gemini 3 Pro can help. I'm honestly so happy and excited for all the college students out there because I wish this was around back when I was in school. This is such a game changer and so useful. I'm honestly a little jealous. So if you want to try it out, sign up to get more access to Google's most accurate model, Gemini 3 Pro. Unlimited image uploads, pro-level image editing, higher limits in Notebook LM, Gemini in Gmail and Docs, 2 terabytes of storage, and more. All you have to do is visit gemini.google/students to learn more and sign up. Terms apply.
If you run a Shopify store, listen up. Shopify's got you covered for selling, but when your shipping volume grows and you're juggling multiple plugins just to get orders out the door, you need tools that can keep up. Stop duct taping your shipping workflow and use the tools that work better together, like Shopify and ShipStation. Think of ShipStation as Shopify's dedicated shipping partner. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels to save you time and money by automating the entire order fulfillment process, from syncing your orders all the way through inventory management and returns. Automate the rate browser to select the lowest rates on shipments, with discounts up to 90% off major carriers like USPS, UPS, and FedEx. No wonder businesses that use ShipStation grow 3 times faster on average and ship 15 times more orders. See how ShipStation can help you scale and boost your Shopify sales. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
A bump in the night, your heart fills with dread. Probably a murderer who wants you dead. It could be a ghost, a demon, or worse. Perhaps you're the victim of a witch's curse. It's hopeless, you're doomed. You'd call a priest if you could. You'd rather just listen to who? Sinisterhood.
I'm gonna kill you.
Hey, everybody. Today we are joined by someone whose work you have most definitely heard. Natalie Robomed is an award-winning journalist and executive producer at Campside Media. She's the writer behind We Crashed, the chart-topping investigation into WeWork that became the hit Apple TV Plus series. And she has spent her career unpacking what power looks like when it goes off the rail. We're here to talk about her newest project, Allison After Nexium, a 7-episode deep investigation into one of the most infamous cult stories of our time, this time told through the lens most people have never heard: the life, the psychology, and the aftermath of actress Allison Mack. It goes beyond the headlines, the details, and asks the harder questions that we've been asking since we first covered this back in 2019. We are so honored to have you here today, Natalie. Welcome.
Oh, thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
Thanks.
Thank you so much for being here. We did cover this way back in 2019. It was one of the earlier episodes that we ever did, and then we revisited it, and it's a cult that sticks with me and I think about quite often. And we reference on the show specifically Allison's kind of role and how it evolved and what we think about that.
Most definitely. What kind of drew you to this topic and stories about power, influence, and ambition and things? People like Keith Raniere that can make someone's life turn upside down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this is the stuff that makes the world go round. And we're all involved in various power dynamics and various relationships. Hopefully none as sinister as the ones that Keith Raniere had. But, you know, this is really the stuff of life, dealing with rich, powerful people. And I've always been interested in stories about those types of people. I think for this story in particular, as it pertains to Allison Mack and Keith Raniere and Allison's role in Nexium, I was really interested in it because it wasn't clear cut. You know, it's not cut and dry. Allison is somebody who, as the podcast investigates, like, both was a victim and victimized others. And I think that nuance and that complexity is really what drew me to it.
Oh, definitely. I appreciated your honesty saying at the beginning when you were presented with this kind of, I don't know that I want to be part of this redemption story.
Yeah.
But Christy and I've struggled with that line of victim versus enforcer.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and it's been really interesting having this project come out, and I think people who listen to it, and I really would encourage everyone to go listen to Allison After
Next.
It's
great.
Thank you. I think those who go listen to it really understand that that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to hold both and interrogate that, because I think we have this sense and this knowledge in our society that very often people who end up hurting other people have been hurt and damaged themselves. And there's something in your history that sets you up in many ways to go ahead and perpetrate that abuse, which is like very uncomfortable and very complicated and also not an excuse, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think, but it has been very interesting seeing some sort of comments online and just some pushback of people feeling like, oh, you know, you've given her a platform. And
yeah,
I hear that and I understand that, because I never want to take away from the victims, but Allison's victims in particular. But at the same time, like, this is somebody who served her time and was a victim in and of herself. So
yeah,
if we can understand better how somebody was a victim and then made that step to victimize others, hopefully we can, like, I don't know, prevent that from happening again, or know what to watch out for, both within ourselves and within other people.
Was that part of the reason that you felt like Allison's post-NXIVM chapter was kind of, this was the right time to tell that story?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the question of, I think Allison is going to be unpacking her time in NXIVM, like, for the rest of her life, whether she's doing it publicly or whether it's just in session with her therapist, you know, it's probably something she's going to be working through forever. And, you know, her realizations about it might be different in 5 years and 10 years. I think this story came to me in part because of my co-executive producer on this project, Vanessa Gregoriadis, who has covered NXIVM extensively and wrote one of the first big stories about NXIVM for the New York Times Magazine back in 2018. And she interviewed Keith Raniere and Claire Bronfman and Allison Mack back in the day. But, you know, I think, yeah, I think with this, I don't know. I mean, I think Allison might feel differently about it in the future, but there was a sense to me that she was far enough out that she was she could talk about it and reflect on it, but not so, it wasn't so far in the rearview mirror that it wasn't still fresh, you know?
Yeah.
And I thought that was important.
Yeah, she was able to recall some details, and it almost sounded like when you were interviewing her, some of the details were coming back to her that she was like, oh, and then we did this. Oh, yes. And almost in disbelief at herself. What? And there were so many elements to the story that just were not in mainstream coverage previously, because I think there was this kind of like victimization of, or there was a labeling of her as period, a perpetrator, full stop. And we struggled in our early coverage of going, you know, yes, that she did these horrible things, but people don't do that in a vacuum. And she wasn't doing that before she ever met these people. So what stories or kind of dynamics did you uncover that you think mainstream media missed, whether intentionally or unintentionally?
Yeah, I really appreciate your perspective and that nuance that you brought to even just the early introduction, because a lot of people weren't seeing that. But I think, because I think you're exactly right, that from the outside, it really just seemed as though Allison Mack was super high up. She was one of the top lieutenants, and she was just doing Keith's bidding, but like getting off on it herself. And of course, it was not as clear cut as that. And I think one thing I did not know before going into this story and working on this podcast was the level of sexual coercion at play within the cult. Like, I think there was this sort of salacious idea that, like, Keith was quote unquote polyamorous, is how he framed it, but that all of these women were just willingly engaging in sexual activity with him. And this is really hard to talk about and really uncomfortable, but like, I think Allison personally has come to a place where she's rethinking whether that was consenting or not.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, like, she was incredibly coerced. Like, her romantic, her sexual relationship with Keith did not begin until 9 years into her time in NXIVM around 2015. Mm-hmm. And so this was a key piece to me that, while very disturbing to hear about and for Allison to speak about, I think was very important to understand. Like, basically, how did Allison's sexual relationship with Keith begin? And the way that it began was, she was on a walk with another woman, and that woman kind of said to her, you know, what's up? How are you doing? And Allison's like, you know, I'm doing okay, but I feel like I have some blocks around my sexuality, around my sex life. Like, I can't get close to people. I get to a certain level of closeness, I can't get further. And, you know, I think that there are some things that happened to me when I was a child that weren't okay in sort of a sexual arena. And which is, I'm talking about it very quickly, but which is like just upsetting in and of itself, you know?
Yeah.
And so that woman suggested to Allison that she speak to Keith about it because, like, you know, and Allison was like, why would I do that? That's weird. Like, he's my business partner because they were working on this curriculum. That's what they called these different programs. Mm-hmm. But The Source, which was like this actor's program to try and get actors into NXIVM, basically. And so then Allison was like, okay. And so after that, she did go and talk to Keith and she told him, you know, I'm feeling some blocks around my sexuality and you know, in my relationships. And Keith sort of said, like, okay, well, I can help you with that. But essentially, like, because it's a practical physical problem, it needs to have like a practical or a physical solution.
Yeah.
Which again was like part, it came from the backdrop of, this was built into NXIVM philosophy, which is something that I found so insidious, that a lot of Keith's perversions were set up via a lot of the education that had been done. So it was just normalized. Like in NXIVM, they had this thought that it was like, okay, you could read a book about skiing, but you won't know how to ski until you actually do it. And so how that pertained to Allison and Keith's sexual relationship was that it was framed as, okay, well, it has to be physical in order to resolve this. And it was framed as energy work, as like tantric, and that he was sort of talking her through it as it was happening and also debriefing with her afterwards to help her or to coerce her into cataloging the experience into a certain way. Mm-hmm. And again, there's this other very core part of NXIVM that I think is so important and that I do see in other cults as well, is this idea in NXIVM that if you were uncomfortable, that meant that you were growing. And so if something doesn't feel right, which was, you know, Allison says it felt fucking weird. Like after having sex, she was like, this is fucking weird. But, and she went and talked to the other woman again. And the woman was like, well, you know, it's Keith's just trying to help. Like he's whatever. And it psychologically and philosophically, the backdrop was if you feel uncomfortable, that means that you're growing. Mm-hmm. So you need to keep pushing past these growth edges in quotes, to really get to be your most actualized self. Mm-hmm. And of course, the real problem begins, the real criminal elements begin, and the most abusive elements begin when Allison starts pushing other people to go past their own edges. And yeah.
Sinisterhood, we'll be right back.
U.S. college students get Google Gemini's Pro plan free for 1 year and use the best model in the world for multimodal understanding. So whether you're uploading a video to get feedback on your presentation, uploading a photo of your homework to ask for extra help, or transcribing notes from a lecture you missed, Gemini 3 Pro can help. I'm honestly so happy and excited for all the college students out there because I wish this was around back when I was in school. This is such a game changer and so useful. I'm honestly a little jealous. So if you want to try it out, sign up to get more access to Google's most accurate model, Gemini 3 Pro. Unlimited image uploads, pro-level image editing, higher limits in Notebook LM, Gemini in Gmail and Docs, 2 terabytes of storage, and more. All you have to do is visit gemini.google/students to learn more and sign up. Terms apply.
Running a Shopify store and drowning in shipping chaos? ShipStation can fix this for you. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels with advanced automation, batch processing, and shipping discounts that a single platform just doesn't offer. Like discounts up to 90% off major carriers. See how ShipStation can make shipping for your Shopify store better. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
There were a lot of shades of Twin Flames universe, which we've also covered, of that your boundaries are really just something that we're trying to push past them for your own good. And I appreciate you bringing up that means it's not necessarily consensual, right? Because it's being put forth as therapy and not intimate relations, which is what it is.
No. See, it's total gaslighting and just
100%.
Using someone's vulnerabilities against them.
Totally. But I think what's really insidious about it and what I've been thinking about a lot is that, like, so many of these cults, like, part of it is always rooted in one grain of truth, you know, mm-hmm. like there actually is something to you in yourself pushing yourself, whether it's at the gym, going up to a different weight class to like see if you can do it. Or like, I don't know, I'm in my 30s. Everybody's suddenly running marathons to like see if they can. And like, yeah, it's like there is something amazing about pushing yourselves and discovering you can do things you didn't know you can do. But for me, I think when I look at it, I'm like, the difference comes when it's coming actually internally and not from not from somebody else telling you. Pressure. But I mean, that's the like mind meld spaghetti mess of Nexium, that it's mm-hmm. like they're a tiny element. You can see how they got there from you can see one tiny grain of truth, mm-hmm. but it gets so distorted and so manipulated and so used against you.
And especially you recognize like, oh, he stole this from someone. Like the truth is, yeah.
That's what I was going to say. We've seen this in pretty much every cult we've covered. There is a grain of truth where it all blossoms from, but then that quickly gets intertwined with coercion, manipulation, abuse. But the victims still remember that grain of truth, and mm-hmm. the perpetrator is still, you know, bringing it back to that every time. Well, you're uncomfortable, so that means this is working. You're growing. So it just keeps feeding the beast over and over. And I think they get so ingratiated and ingrained in it so quickly that it's just you're in over your head before you realize what's really happened.
100%. And I think it's really important to talk about this part of it because I think a lot of people look at cults and like look at these cult stories and sort of think like, how did these people get here? Like, how did they, what, like, I would never do that. You know, mm-hmm. I would never do something as horrible as that. And of course, none of us want to think that we would, but I think, mm-hmm. I think it's important to like understand the mechanisms that are put in place in these groups that allow for and kind of set up structures in which people do horrible things. Because as you said earlier, it's not in a vacuum, right? Mm-hmm. Like there's other things going on, and there's like other mental frameworks being set up that cause these terrible things to occur.
Yeah, and I loved Vanessa's statement in episode 4 after she met Keith in Mexico, and she said, it's hard to explain how underwhelming it was to meet him after such a buildup. And she said he looked like, quote, just your average car salesman. So what factors do you think that would allow somebody so mediocre, so unattractive, who spewed such nonsense?
So hairy.
And so schlubbish. We kept calling him schlubby. But to wield this, but this like intense power over others, was it like the external legitimization from having like Nancy and other women already in it, like the like videos that they made that made it look like it was a legitimate organization, the sashes. I mean, it's just every time we're like, him?
Yeah. That guy? I mean,
no, totally, totally. And it's like, it's so like funny because that's exactly right. That's like the reaction everybody had to seeing him in The Vow when you kind of see him in this volleyball clothes with his like greasy gray hair and the sweatpants like, and whatever. You're like, this loser. Yeah. Like it's mm-hmm. it's just this like what? But I think you're really right to bring up a lot of people, you know, we take cues from how other people treat somebody.
Yeah.
So within Nexium, you know, and I actually think about the time when Allison first met Keith, which was on the volleyball court. I mean, mm-hmm. we take our cues from other people. If somebody is treating this person with reverence and as important and as coming to sit down at their feet to listen to them, then you are sort of like, oh, holy shit, like this person's an important person. I have to treat them like that. But I will say, you know, I've never spoken to Keith myself. I've never interviewed him myself. But from the people that I have talked to, including Allison Mack, including Lauren Salzman, who is Nancy Salzman's daughter and spent like more than 20 years in Nexium, I think that Keith was incredibly adept at finding somebody's greatest weakness, identifying it, and then using that against them. So in the case of Allison, very early on, I think at a first or second workshop, Keith and Nancy basically told her, you know what? You're performative. You're a narcissist, which for somebody who grew up as a child actor and like had always been in competition with other women, you know, mm-hmm. at various auditions at 12 years old and looking around and being like, okay, am I prettier than her? Oh, I heard she's really good. Blah, blah, blah. And then always worried about whether she was performing a version of self to get people to like her. He hit on her greatest weakness and her psychological weakness where she was like, oh shit, like, okay, then I am a narcissist if Keith says this, and I need to fix myself. And then Keith represented Nexium as the panacea, as the thing that was going to solve everything. And it's like, all right, you need to come here to fix yourself, to fix the ways that you can't have deep relationships with people, to fix the ways in which of course would then later become a part of his sexual story with her. And yeah, to fix all the ways in which you're broken. And I think he was very, very good at figuring out each person's mental Achilles heel and then flipping that.
We always say on the show, if somebody gets scammed, that the victim shouldn't feel bad because the scammer is like a snake and snakes bite. And like, right, we were always like, you got snake bit. That's Christy and I say that on the show, because when people write in having gone through situations like this, you don't want them to feel, I got duped by this loser. It's like, I got duped by a really good liar and a scammer who just looks like a loser used car salesman. You know, it's just like
100%. Yeah, I've worked on, I worked on another podcast called Catch Me If You Can that was like about a scammer like this who was so, again, like in like modern parlance, like so mid, you know, like just looked so unassuming. But I actually think like there's part of that that maybe even helps psychologically where you sort of think like, okay, this person couldn't possibly be threatening. Like, yeah,
they're just ugly.
They're just so normal seeming. Yeah. And yet it's like the wolf in sheep's clothing kind of thing. And I don't know. Yeah, I feel the exact same way. Like, I have a lot of I really have so much empathy for people who find themselves like the victims of scams or find themselves targeted. There's often or in cults, like there's often so much shame of like, fuck, how was I so stupid? How could this happen to me? How was I taken in? And, you know, I think in all my reporting on these subjects, both on Nexium and other stories, I just feel like, to say it without sounding like fear-mongering, like it could kind of happen to all of us.
Yeah.
Even if we don't think it could, like if we met the wrong person at the wrong time when we were uniquely vulnerable, it could. And like, I say that not to scare people, but just to like have empathy and like have eyes open to it, because I think it's uncomfortable. Like, we want to think we'd be the cult leader, but I'm like, I don't know, girl. Like, a lot more of us would be the follower than we'd like to admit, I think.
That there is so much shame, like you said, in stories we hear from people that have come out of cults or been scammed and financially or whatever. And people do, it is easy at keyboard warriors to be like, well, that's stupid. I would never do that. They prey on that one thing that imagine your most vulnerable weakness. It keeps you up at night. That is like the thing you think worst about yourself.
Yeah.
And then you have someone saying that, oh, I can fix that.
Exactly.
Who wouldn't be like, well, I'll try it, you know, and then it just snowballs from there. But I mean, and that's the cult leader. If they get you in the door, they know they've kind of got you and they can get their claws into you.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Sinisterhood, we'll be right back.
U.S. college students get Google Gemini's Pro Plan free for 1 year and use the best model in the world for multimodal understanding. So whether you're uploading a video to get feedback on your presentation, uploading a photo of your homework to ask for extra help, or transcribing notes from a lecture you missed, Gemini 3 Pro can help. I'm honestly so happy and excited for all the college students out there, because I wish this was around back when I was in school. This is such a game changer and so useful. I'm honestly a little jealous. So if you want to try it out, sign up to get more access to Google's most accurate model, Gemini 3 Pro. Unlimited image uploads, pro-level image editing, higher limits in Notebook LM, Gemini in Gmail and Docs, 2 terabytes of storage, and more. All you have to do is visit gemini.google/students to learn more and sign up. Terms apply.
If you run a Shopify store, listen up. Shopify has got you covered for selling, but when your shipping volume grows and you're juggling multiple plugins just to get orders out the door, you need tools that can keep up. Stop duct taping your shipping workflow and use the tools that work better together, like Shopify and ShipStation. Think of ShipStation as Shopify's dedicated shipping partner. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels to save you time and money by automating the entire order fulfillment process. From syncing your orders all the way through inventory management and returns, automate the rate browser to select the lowest rates on shipments with discounts up to 90% off major carriers like USPS, UPS, and FedEx. No wonder businesses that use ShipStation grow 3 times faster on average and ship 15 times more orders. See how ShipStation can help you scale and boost your Shopify sales. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
I liked that you explored how the external world was processing her, because I feel like that gives a mirror to people, like Christy said, keyboard warriors, who might say like, she's just trying to, you know, be famous again or whatever. And I think your show makes clear that she is not, that she is pursuing a career that is retributive to her, as well as something that she clearly was already interested in. You know, at the end of the day, the NXIVM scam was, this will fix you. Mm-hmm. And she seems like she wants to help people. But in the episode where you described her awaiting sentencing in school and how one student used her as fodder for a TikTok skit and other students went and complained about her, and just sort of this external vision of her, her internal processing, you know, how did those moments to you kind of reveal about how the outside world was ready for her then, and now having completed her sentence, do you think that there has maybe been a shift now?
You know, I think it's really interesting. And I think because I see both sides of it, both mm-hmm. both with the instance that you're talking about when Allison was in school and mm-hmm. and like now as well, you know, like so Allison, when she was on house arrest before she went to prison, she started pursuing, she started going to Long Beach Community College, and then she transferred to Berkeley, and she wanted to be a women's and gender studies major, which I have to be so honest, like when she told, I was like, Allison, how do you not get that this is going to come across as bad? Like, how are you this like naive, or like naive is the kind read, like delusional is the like more unkind read. Like, how do you not get this? And it feels almost like hubristic or something. But like, at least in my experience of her, Allison moves through the world with like a very like wide-eyed naivete. And it's like almost jarring. Like I, as like a pretty cynical person, I think, you know, I still enjoy light
We're
and
both cynical,
rainbows,
yeah.
but like I'm a journalist. Like yeah. I'm pretty mm-hmm. cynical generally. And I'm, you know, looking at, so I completely understand these students being like, I don't want her in my class. Mm-hmm. Like this doesn't feel safe to me. But yeah. then I also see the other side of it, which is like, okay, well, if you want a rigorous academic experience, like, wouldn't you want to be confronted by somebody who maybe holds opposing views? But then that like punctures the idea of campus or an intimate seminar as a safe place. So like, I really see all of the sides. Mm-hmm. And I think that's mm-hmm. part of what like so drew me to this, because it's like, it's not like cut and dry. It's not like Allison immediately realized all the things that she'd done wrong and then mm-hmm. never made any mistakes again. Like she's like a flawed person, as we all are, and like continues to take steps that maybe missteps, you know, mm-hmm. throughout. And so, you know, I think it's really, it's interesting to me to see how, and I'm interested to see how people continue to kind of respond to her throughout her life, you know, like, as you said, so since she ended up graduating with a degree in psychology from Berkeley, and then she's now pursuing a master's in social work, and she's like working with two arts nonprofits to kind of bring the arts into prisons. I can see all the reads of that. Like, is she being a white savior? Is she being like a real theater kid? Or is this like genuine? But then at the same time, it's like, what do you want her to do? Like,
mm-hmm. yeah.
she is she supposed to just like roll over and die? Like, I don't,
yeah,
you know, like
become a hermit.
Right. Like, what mm-hmm. do we do? Like, somebody needs to be working with incarcerated peoples and helping mm-hmm. them. So like, why not somebody who's done time and has, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. again, I can see all the the nuances of it. And this is
that's
what
a good
is,
journalist.
Thank
well, it
you.
Makes you a good podcast series. Sure, absolutely.
No, but I mean, this is all really difficult. It's really difficult stuff because we don't actually want to think about what we do as a society with people who've done wrong. You know,
yeah.
Like we don't. That's why. That's probably right. Why we have so many people incarcerated in the U.S. Right? Like mm-hmm. we have like a quarter of the world's incarcerated populations.
Yeah,
just crazy, way disproportionate to the actual number of the population that we have. So yeah, I mean, I'm like, what? These are bigger questions. Like, yeah. What do we do with people when they've come out of prison? What do we do with people when they've done
yeah.
wrong? Like, I don't know.
Well, and she mentions in the first episode about how she kind of grew up thinking, and her family style was like, everything's always going to work out. Mm-hmm. Like, it seems like even now she kind of has, like you said,
yes.
kind of that naivete, even after everything she's been through, like, well, yeah, it'll work out if I'm a women's major at Berkeley. Like, sure. And yeah. without really seeing maybe yeah. all sides of how everyone would interpret yeah. that.
And I'm not a psychologist, but like my read on that is that it's a coping mechanism, you know, mm. like that is like, she is a doer. Like she mm-hmm. stays doing things. Like even mm-hmm. when she was on house arrest at the very beginning, she was still doing her like DOS protocols of like waking up at 5:30, and like she couldn't go out. She had an ankle monitor on. She couldn't go outside to work out. So instead she was like running laps. Like she created like an obstacle course laps within her parents' house, you know, like
wow.
there's, and of course, part of that was still, she was very deeply ingrained in this psychology of DOS, and it, she was still coming out of NXIVM as a cult. But like, I point to that to kind of point to the extent to which like she does things and like stays busy too, which I totally relate to. Like, I think anybody who's like a workaholic relates to, it's like, sometimes mm-hmm. it's much easier to just do jobs, like do yeah. things in vacuum or like whatever it is, and like sit and look at your feelings because
yeah.
oh, they're really uncomfortable sure. sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, it made sense when she said, you know, I want to do the podcast because people, when all these, you know, headlines came out, people were like, she's a pervert. And based on yeah. everything she's done, period, I know what she is. And she's like, my whole life, I wanted to be the best at everything. And when she even said, in high school, I was judged, you know, best whatever. Like, she still remembers these kind of external accolades, but having been labeled as like the worst, yeah. now kind of the idea of, well, I'm going to be judged either way. The truth is the truth. And I respected that she wants to do as much as she can for what she feels like. It sounded like the prison population was pretty welcoming and kind to her. You know, her first bunkie being like spreading the word about her and saying, you know, she's not part of the life. Like, just let her be. Her second bunkmate kind of becoming a best friend, you know, them making their vases together with their flowers and stuff. It sounds like she did not consider, like, I'm too good to be in prison, you know, them calling her Piper when she comes in. Like, she was kind of, I think, wide-eyed and scared when she went in. But I appreciated that she sort of took it on as almost like from a curiosity perspective. So it's a great question for the audience is like, when someone has committed real harm, but was also manipulated, but was also sentenced by a judge and didn't appeal their sentence, took it on the nose, served her time, like, what do you expect this person to do? So, you know, is redemption even the right frame for her? Or is it just she's living her life and wanted to, you know, facilitate her story out there somewhere in her own way?
Yeah, I mean, it's I feel like I start every answer for you by saying it's complicated.
It is, though. It's not too complicated.
It is complicated.
I'm a lawyer. Everything depends. It depends.
Yeah.
Oh, no, you're adding all those clauses at the end of sentences with like, hereto notwithstanding. No, yeah, it's, I mean, so with Allison, like, she was already a public figure. She's been a public figure. Pretty much her entire life. I mean, she's been working from such a young age and was famous before NXIVM. And so was going to be famous after NXIVM, you know, mm-hmm. because that's how fame works. And definitely her fame has like, and her beauty and her privilege and her race and so many other things have made her path into and out of prison smoother than it would be for a lot of people. But, you know, I think about, you know, I've had some people sort of ask me like, oh, essentially, don't you feel bad for giving Allison a platform? And I think that's an interesting question, but I also can't help but look around at the current state of media and celebrity media, which Allison is a celebrity, whichever way. She could have started her own podcast. She could have gone on Call Her Daddy. Yeah. I know that sounds absurd, but it's like,
no, you're right.
She could have done a thing with softball interviews, and instead she let herself be perceived and examined and questioned and pushed by a real journalist, me. And she wanted to say it all aloud just once. That's what she said, so that, you know, also in the future, if people ask, she can just refer them back to this. So I found that really interesting. But there's, you know, I've also done stories with other people who've gone to prison and sat across from people describing incredibly violent crimes to me, crimes that they committed also within prison, with no remorse, with not anything, no hint of feeling across their face. And Allison is not that. Allison is deeply, at least in my experience, deeply remorseful. She feels, I think, as much as she can feel and still continue living, the pain that she's brought on other people. And again, some people are going to say, she's a performer, she's just performing that to me. I did not feel that in my experience with her. And again, having sat on the other side with people who've done similar stuff with absolutely no feeling, I feel that she really is remorseful. And like you said, like she has done her time. Like, does that mean I expect her to, like, should she then be, I don't know, making $5 million and doing, like, Skims brand deals? Like, I don't know. But, like, I'm not the person that's, you know, like, I wouldn't be the person enabling that. Like, I actually can't. I'm sort of like, I wanted to investigate this for the story that it was and is. Yeah. And I still think it's worthwhile.
Oh, yeah. No, definitely. Sinisterhood, we'll be right back.
U.S. college students get Google Gemini's Pro plan free for 1 year and use the best model in the world for multimodal understanding. So whether you're uploading a video to get feedback on your presentation, uploading a photo of your homework to ask for extra help, or transcribing notes from a lecture you missed, Gemini 3 Pro can help. I'm honestly so happy and excited for all the college students out there because I wish this was around back when I was in school. This is such a game changer and so useful. I'm honestly a little jealous. So if you want to try it out, sign up to get more access to Google's most accurate model, Gemini 3 Pro. Unlimited image uploads, pro-level image editing, higher limits in Notebook LM, Gemini in Gmail and Docs, 2 terabytes of storage, and more. All you have to do is visit gemini.google/students to learn more and sign up. Terms apply.
Running a Shopify store and drowning in shipping chaos? ShipStation can fix this for you. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels with advanced automation, batch processing, and shipping discounts that a single platform just doesn't offer. Like discounts up to 90% off major carriers. See how ShipStation can make shipping for your Shopify store better. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
I feel like listening to her in the times that she got caught up in emotion, it is an emotion that comes and overtakes her. Yeah. And if she's that good of an actress, she does not need a podcast. She'll win an Oscar next week. You know what I mean? Like, it was truly
that's a great
genuine
point.
You can
she
hear
probably
it.
Wouldn't have been on Smallville.
Yeah, like, no offense, but, like, I think, she was fine on the CW. She did great or whatever. But, yeah, she was not like Meryl Streep before she went in. And if what she is confessing to you and the moments that she has with you and those moments of truth, it at least played to me. I mean, I was walking next to this park we have in Dallas called White Rock Lake, and I had my headphones in, and there were times that I was like, oh, like, and I would cry with her too, because you do hear it almost like she's recalling it, but it was so recently that it, like, the emotion of it, she's maybe processed some of it, mm-hmm. but it's like grief, right? It comes in waves, and it almost just, like, comes up and surprises her, even to where I was like, you know, nobody is that good of a chess master to, like, feign the surprise and the catch of the voice and anybody who thinks that, I would challenge you to listen to the entire podcast end to end. And I think it sort of speaks for itself. But I think it would be easy if someone just heard, you know, a quick clip or whatever to go, oh, she's just, you know, she's acting. But she also didn't say, and now that I'm done with this podcast, I can't wait to have a television series. Like, it seems like she is done with acting and wants to pursue this art kind of therapy situation.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, especially the times when she's speaking about how it affected her own family. And when she's awaiting her sentencing and thinking about her mom and her brother and everything. I mean, that emotion sounds very real and raw and believable that she is upset about what it is doing to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And her mother was just heartbroken throughout.
Yeah. I mean, that was, I was going to say, like, so I spoke to Allison's mom for this podcast, and that was honestly one of the most upsetting things to me because, like, yeah, and Allison talks about it in the very first episode. She talks about being at her sentencing and her brother being behind her and her mom mm-hmm. and all these people. And she basically says, you know, she's crying. She's like, I'm not guilty, but like they are. And mm-hmm. they're essentially being dragged through this. And that there's so many parts to this because her mom, and it really like broke my heart too, like as a journalist, because her mom was sort of said to me, like, she feels an immense amount of guilt for like not having fought to get Allison out as hard as like India Oxenberg's mom did, for example. And I think that's the part where it's like, yeah, ultimately, like, this is also a person, like, with a family whose mm-hmm. mom is there being like, how do I get my daughter back? Like, mm-hmm. And I think, yeah, it's, there's so much, yeah, there's so much guilt there from Allison's mom feeling like she didn't do enough and
yeah. mm-hmm.
all this kind of stuff. But yeah, it's really tough. But also Allison wasn't the only one, you know, like there were a lot of people in NXIVM.
Yeah.
Not so many who were as deep as she was, but there were a lot.
From your reporting and your speaking with Allison, what do you really think was the moment that she crossed kind of that psychological point of no return, where her mom probably wasn't going to be able to get her out at that point?
I mean, her mom said to me that Allison got involved was all in pretty quickly. And because I think she said something like Allison didn't dilly-dally on the edge for long. She like mm-hmm. jumped in with both feet, which like is how Allison does everything again. Mm-hmm. She's like very whole. It's all or nothing, you know? And her mom basically said to me, it's like she became very annoying. Like everything was Keith says, and Allison very quickly had the answer to everything that was Keith. So for me, I think the point, there are several points, but really when Smallville ended and Allison moved up to Albany, I think that was a huge moment because, so NXIVM was based in Albany in upstate New York. And prior to the time that Smallville ended, Allison had been living in Vancouver and then in New York. But when the show ended, it was suggested to her by whoever, probably Keith in some way, that she move up to Albany. And I think being there in the geographic proximity with Keith at his beck and call, where you could take walks with him all the time and mm-hmm. have one-on-one time with him, I think that's when things really ratcheted up. In terms of Allison's involvement with the group and psychological like point of no return. And then I think one of the other major flashpoints was like 2015, which was the formation of DOS.
Yeah.
And there was no way, like that to me is when things really get crazy. And like, mm-hmm. if you think about the life cycle of a cult or something, like that was really sort of the apex that also led to its downfall, you know, because it was within DOS that there was the slave master dynamic, where Allison was a slave who reported up to Keith. She was one of the first 8 slaves within DOS. And then Keith essentially said at a certain point, okay, you guys now all need to become masters yourself and have mm-hmm. slaves yourself. And that's when Allison had 4 slaves, including, or recruited, I should say, 4 slaves, including India Oxenberg. And yeah, that's where the brandings happened. That's where this awful thing called the seduction assignment happened, mm-hmm. where Allison essentially told her slaves, all in quotes, to it's like so strange to use this language, master slave, mm-hmm. I just have to say, but it's what they use, so I'm using it. Sent them to go and seduce Keith. And then, yeah, it was the brandings, from my perspective, that ultimately led to its downfall, because it was Sarah Edmondson's husband saw Sarah Edmondson's brand, and that kind of sparked in many ways the beginning of the end, thanks to the brave actions of Sarah Edmondson and a lot of other outspoken critics who risked a lot to get the word out and really put themselves on the line to help get other people out of NXIVM.
No, definitely. Yeah. DOS was so insidious with the coercion, the starvation, the branding, the blackmail, the sexual
exploitation.
Sleep deprivation. We really struggled, you know, with that role of being both victim and enforcer. But I was telling my husband about this last night, and he said, you know what that makes me think of, the master-slave relationship, is the hierarchy, the coercion of hierarchy built on obedience, surveillance, fear, where the control flows downward, the loyalty flows upward. He said, have you ever seen the documentary American Pimp, where these sexual exploiters, quite literally happily calling themselves pimps, have what they call bottom bitches, who are these enforcers, who they're sort of treated as the pets. There's a handful of them, sometimes just one, sometimes multiple, and then recruit women, get the money from women. And really the idea that a man is manipulating them at the end of the day. And that I think if you were to ask, you know, someone on the street, hey, this person was in this sexually exploitive, coercive situation, and it was one of the people in a documentary like that, they would look differently on that than hearing about Allison or Nikki or any of the others that are probably more affluent, wealthy, have more power. But I think there's a lot of parallels in that, and sexual exploitation is sexual exploitation. So what do you kind of think people have misunderstood about how Allison, someone like her, could end up in a role like that? Where normally, you know, you would see in the someone who is not perhaps famous or powerful, it makes sense that they might get wrapped up in that. But I think, is it just sort of that picking on those exploited personality traits, or there's a larger thing to it?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen that documentary. It sounds really interesting. I think, you know, that was one of my leading questions going into this, was like, how could somebody like Allison, somebody who ostensibly has it all, end up in a group like this and end up doing things like this, right? Like, she had money, she was pretty, she was attractive. She had a great career, she seemed to have it all. But I really think that it comes back down to those mental insecurities and psychological Achilles heels that I referred to, that Keith was able to take advantage of, because we all have those, regardless of how rich or successful we are. And, you know, Allison was also an actor. She started, as I said, like acting really young. I think she describes something that I think a lot of people feel at a certain point in their life, when even if you have achieved all the markers of success, where you kind of look around and go like, is this it? Like, why do I not still feel happy? Why am I not happy? Like, I feel this kind of sense of ennui. And I think that's what led her to ultimately going to her first NXIVM workshop. I think there's another part too, that like a lot of people in entertainment, I think Allison, at least when she was first being recruited into NXIVM, I find her to be a very intelligent person, and also an emotionally intelligent person, but she's not educated, at least not the time when she went to there. Like, she got her GED early, and then she left home, moved out at 16. And so again, like, she's smart and intelligent, but she's not educated. And I think I see that kind of again and again with a lot of people who find themselves in these groups, where it's like, you're less able to parse that what these things that these leaders are saying is actually something that Aristotle said,
or
like
this
other thinker said, or maybe you're less used to critically thinking about like the other way. And I, you know, I'm not saying that to like rag on Allison or other people, but like, I think that we live in a pretty anti-intellectual time when like higher education in general is like denigrated and looked down on. But I'm like, I don't know. I still think it's important to learn stuff, at least personally.
Yeah.
Like, maybe it can ward you off to somebody telling you, hey, I'm a fucking genius because I'm saying this thing that low-key Plato said. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, exactly. Twisting it and taking credit.
Or even other actual cult leaders, you know,
that we've seen that.
You're like, oh, yeah, I'm not really familiar with Jonestown. It's like, well, there's a lot of similarities between this and that. Yeah. So
history, let's look it up. Let's read a book. Let's crack a book open.
Yeah.
And I think that's
the street
border.
Smarts weren't there either, really.
Yeah.
No. I mean that too. I mean, and I, you know, I'm sort of presenting this kind of jokingly, but I do think there's something else also with Allison, which is that, like, and I already spoke to, I feel that her sort of naivete, but she talks about in the podcast what she describes as having experienced, like, things that happened sexually to her when she was younger, both onset and offset in a more personal realm, that were not okay. And I think oftentimes when things like that happen to children, it can really warp your understanding of, like, normalcy or what is normal behavior or what is appropriate behavior. You can in turn be very sexually explicit but also naive in quick succession, often with no time in between, and childlike in some ways but also wise beyond your years in some ways. And that's very common among child actors, is like having both of those qualities among child actors. Like, people always say famous people are kind of frozen at the age that they got famous, right? That's like the sort of phrase. And part of me thinks that's in some ways true with Allison. And then a darker undercurrent of, when sexually inappropriate things happen to children, it often, like, in some ways can freeze them.
It freezes them too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At that age. Yeah.
I don't think it's an excuse at all, but I do appreciate all of the backstory on onset things that happened to her, her prior relationships, how those all interacted. And I think it's not presented in a way to excuse what she did, but listening to it and having already studied NXIVM and not coming to this, you know, this is not my first experience with this group, I was like, oh, that makes sense. Like, given that experience, that makes sense why she reacted that way later with Keith.
Some context.
Yeah, I was like, at no point did I think, oh, well, they're just trying to sweep everything under the rug. To me, it was like the reporting is incomplete without it. And it was just, up until this point, impossible for any of us to have known this before.
Yeah.
It just, like, makes a lot of – it almost makes too much sense. Like, I was almost like – but,
she was ripe for the picking.
Yeah, it is. It is what it is. It's, like, it's unfortunate, but – you know, yeah.
Sinisterhood, we'll be right back.
U.S. college students get Google Gemini's Pro plan free for 1 year and use the best model in the world for multimodal understanding. So whether you're uploading a video to get feedback on your presentation, uploading a photo of your homework to ask for extra help, or transcribing notes from a lecture you missed, Gemini 3 Pro can help. I'm honestly so happy and excited for all the college students out there, because I wish this was around back when I was in school. This is such a game changer and so useful. I'm honestly a little jealous. So if you want to try it out, sign up to get more access to Google's most accurate model, Gemini 3 Pro. Unlimited image uploads, pro-level image editing, higher limits in Notebook LM, Gemini in Gmail and Docs, 2 terabytes of storage, and more. All you have to do is visit gemini.google/students to learn more and sign up. Terms apply.
If you run a Shopify store, listen up. Shopify has got you covered for selling, but when your shipping volume grows and you're juggling multiple plugins just to get orders out the door, you need tools that can keep up. Stop duct taping your shipping workflow and use the tools that work better together, like Shopify and ShipStation. Think of ShipStation as Shopify's dedicated shipping partner. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels to save you time and money by automating the entire order fulfillment process, from syncing your orders all the way through inventory management and returns. Automate the rate browser to select the lowest rates on shipments, with discounts up to 90% off major carriers like USPS, UPS, and FedEx. No wonder businesses that use ShipStation grow 3 times faster on average and ship 15 times more orders. See how ShipStation can help you scale and boost your Shopify sales. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Yeah, as you were going through some new facts that came out, was there anything that was difficult to corroborate, or anything that was particularly, I mean, this is already a shocking, mind-blowing case, but anything that came out in your reporting that you had not seen that totally, you know, shocked you from prior coverage?
I mean, I did not know about, we knew a lot about the calorie restriction, but I did not know where Allison was on a 500 calorie a day diet for 3 years as part of her time in DOS. I did not know about the fact that she wore a cilice as punishment. So mm-hmm. a cilice was a sort of belt with spikes on the inside that Allison says she would wear as punishment if she overate. Again, her words. Mm-hmm. And so if she, quote, overate, those spikes would dig in to her stomach. And that to me was horrifying, honestly, because like it's so upsetting because it's self-harm.
Yeah.
And it's being presented as self-growth and also in a religious context. Like it's taking this religious practice of like burlap, where nuns or monks or whatever wearing burlap sacks or even like self-flagellation or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's taking that and using that framework to pretend that this is all spiritual work when it's self-harm and control. Yeah. Because Keith was benefiting from these women being underfed and underslept 100%. And deliriously hungry for mm-hmm. years. You're easier to control when you're in that state. And it's like, I know how I feel if I haven't slept enough. I'm like kooky.
Yeah.
So imagine
or
that.
Or you get hangry and you're like, I'd do anything for a burrito for three right years. Now. I mean, he's got like, he's got them all in the palm of his hand right where he wants them because he is both their abuser but their savior when he wants to be.
Having to meditate on his image in the morning. I mean, sickening. Yeah.
Seriously. Meditating on his goodness. I think I say this in the podcast, but like that is one of the things that Allison told me she had to do as part of her like dedication and devotion to Keith as a master was she had to meditate on his goodness every single day. And that was one of the things that really disturbed me the most. You know, like I meditate. I do. It's part of my spiritual practice. But hearing that, like the day that she told me that, I came home and I tried to meditate before bed as I usually do. And like Keith's face kept popping into my head. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, oh. And that was just
when I was listening to that, I was walking at the lake and you said that and you were like, his face came in my head and his face came in my head. And I really did have to, because I meditate as well. I had to take a moment and just be like, psh, like, get out of here. And I thought this is because I've listened to, but I was like binging through the series, but I was like, I don't know this person. I've never met him. If I had to sit there and go, you know, get out of my head, how hard must it be if you are living with him, working with him every day? That's become your career. And to hear her financially.
Having a sexual relationship.
But it was the sexual relationship through therapy. So now your therapy is also wound in and her finances were all gone, you know, at some point.
Yeah.
It's like Scientology.
It's a controlling relationship. Mm-hmm. That's not even like a strong enough phrase for it. You know what I mean? But
it's
prison, again, like, and like we're saying all this stuff and it's like, it doesn't excuse any of the behavior, but it helps you understand how it got there. And like I have to say, like as a journalist, like even just working on this story and hearing this stuff secondhand, like it's disturbed me. Like I did the bulk of these interviews over 2 days with Vanessa Gregoriadis and with Allison Mack. And after that first day of interviews, I mean, I was driving home just like wrecked. Like I like went to heat up my Christmas dinner. It was the day after Christmas that we did the first day of interviews. I went to heat up my Christmas. I'd hosted Christmas on Christmas Day and then went to my husband was like, you are crazy.
That's a real journalist though. You're like, I gotta get the story though. It's happening.
But I came home, but it made sense. It's like this liminal time between Christmas and New Year. It's a good time for reflection, I think. I came home and I was heating up my leftovers and I looked at my plate and I went, it's probably more than 500 calories. Which is like, I'm not a person that thinks about calories. Like I've done a lot of work on ED stuff. I'm like not there. And it's like, that was Keith's voice, even in that I'd been hearing secondhand from Allison, now secondhand in my brain. And then I tried to meditate and I saw his face. And even like I tried to go to sleep that night and I was just, really disturbed by it. I don't know another way to say it. I had to like, I moved into the spare room and took the dog to sleep with me, which I like don't do because I just like, I don't know. Yeah. I like needed my dog for protection or something. Yeah. Like it's
Did you find that you had to create guardrails or boundaries for yourself, like mental practices, so it didn't seep into you?
Yeah. I mean, I think like it's the mental guardrails were to just sort of like get through the bulk of the writing as sort of fluidly and quickly as possible. Because this was a story that I lived with for a long time, but I essentially tried to, because it took a long time between meeting Allison and doing the interview for it to all come together kind of thing. It was like a year and a half. But yeah, I mean, you know, I've also done other, this isn't my first time doing a fucked up story.
Yeah.
So it's, but yes, I mean, so I have good self-care practices of like go for a walk, meditate, talk about it in therapy, like talk about all the things. Yeah, I definitely did have to employ part of that. And again, you know, I guess it feels funny for me to be talking about this because like it's really not about, I don't know, it just feels weird to be like boohoo, it was hard for me, that's not but it's, I don't know, I think it is kind of important to note because it's like it's real, like that's this is how powerful this stuff is and how controlling and manipulative this guy was, that even hearing about it secondhand like bothers you, even as a seasoned journalist, it still sticks with you, the story sticks with you. And I think that speaks to like the depth of control Keith had, but I mean, it's why we're even talking about it now. Like there is something about NXIVM, and I say this in the final episode, but I really think that NXIVM is the Manson family of our time.
Oh yeah,
just because of the depth of control that he had over these women, which again is another, you know, the Manson murders, like, were carried out mostly by women. Most of his followers were women. And he had these women doing his worst bidding to an extremely violent conclusion. And NXIVM did not end in murders, but, you know, I've often wondered, like, what if they hid out in Mexico and took up guns? And, like, there was violent shit that happened in NXIVM. Like, the brandings are violent. The sexual assault is violent. Like, and it's, if I, you know, like we didn't know the each beat of control that Charles Manson was enacting on those women. I think there was a lot of drugs from what I understand, for sure a lot of sex too. But yeah, so to be able to understand each part of this puzzle, I've thought was critical. And I think, yeah, I think we'll be living with the story for a long time.
Yeah.
It's so critical. Thank you for covering like her perspective of it, because we see so many of these now cults online. We have political cults, you have wellness cults, where there's so many funnels where I think people can get sucked into something. And I like that she pointed out, you know, when she was in prison talking to other women who said, oh, I was here because I was the getaway driver for this guy. For I was the bag woman for this drug dealer. I was the, and it was a ton of them had these relationships that it was a man is this fulcrum and it moves in a way that wrecks a ton of lives, some of whom are male lives, but most of whom are women. And I just keep coming back to Twin Flames universe that we've covered on here that involves being the panacea. You're lonely. We will help you. So kind of how do you think Allison's part particularly, but overall the NXIVM story kind of helps us understand modern architecture in these cult movements, whether kind of formal or informal?
I mean, I think Allison's story helps us understand how somebody can be manipulated and their weaknesses taken advantage of to the extent that they then are perfectly primed to commit crimes themselves, you know? And I also think it helps us understand that in cults, yes, there is a cult leader, but there's also a lot of other people who are complicit. But who are complicit and victims themselves sometimes. And the point at which victim turns into perpetrator is a difficult one to pinpoint, you know, and that's for judge and juries. Yeah, I mean, I think it's like, I also think it like, at least for me, it urges me to sort of think about the ways in which we are complicit just by allowing things to occur in our daily lives, you know, like it feels so like pat for me to say, but, you know, if you're just standing by and not doing anything to stop it, like you're part of the problem.
There's complicity in that. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. And so I think there's part of, so Allison went one step further. She didn't just stand by. She also enacted real harm herself, but there were plenty of people in NXIVM who did just stand by or who actively recruited or did other things that didn't serve time or weren't brought up on trial. And so there's, yeah, I don't know. There's just lots of other parts to it. And I think it helps us understand how, yeah, just how many people are guilty within cults in different ways, I guess. Yeah.
Sinisterhood, we'll be right back.
U.S. college students get Google Gemini's Pro plan free for 1 year and use the best model in the world for multimodal understanding. So whether you're uploading a video to get feedback on your presentation, uploading a photo of your homework to ask for extra help, or transcribing notes from a lecture you missed, Gemini 3 Pro can help. I'm honestly so happy and excited for all the college students out there because I wish this was around back when I was in school. This is such a game changer and so useful. I'm honestly a little jealous. So if you want to try it out, sign up to get more access to Google's most accurate model, Gemini 3 Pro. Unlimited image uploads, pro-level image editing, higher limits in Notebook LM, Gemini in Gmail and Docs, 2 terabytes of storage, and more. All you have to do is visit gemini.google/students to learn more and sign up. Terms apply.
Running a Shopify store and drowning in shipping chaos? ShipStation can fix this for you. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels with advanced automation, batch processing, and shipping discounts that a single platform just doesn't offer. Like discounts up to 90% off major carriers. See how ShipStation can make shipping for your Shopify store better. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Certainly. After spending so much time with Allison, is there still a question or questions that keep you up at night?
If I'm being completely honest, like things that keep me, I hope that her victims are healing, you know, mm-hmm. That's one of the things that I really think about and hope for. Nothing keeps me up at night, but like, if any, the one part of this that still scares me, if I'm being completely honest, is Keith, you know, mm-hmm. Like he's in prison for, I think his sentence is 120 years. He's in Tucson, Arizona. And this is, it's very difficult for me because I understand that the United Nations has said that solitary confinement is a form of torture. But I think about Keith being in Gen Pop and I think about how manipulative he is and what he could be doing and how he could be controlling people even from within prison. And that's worrying to me, yeah, you know, yeah. I'm sure it's fine, but I just am like, I don't know.
That's a good point, though.
It's scary and it's, you know, maybe he'll become feeble. It's funny. I interviewed somebody who used to be in the same prison as Charles Manson. And this was when Manson was like 80 something at this point. He was just like a crazy old guy in the yard. But he said, you know, you would see Manson just walk by and everyone kind of just gave him a nod. Like it was still Manson, you know, people still revered him. Nobody fucked with him because he was Charles Manson, even though he was an old guy. And I am sort of like, yeah, like what's that going to be like for Keith?
Is that going to be Ranieri's legacy as well?
Yeah. And then, you know, I also think about the people who still believe he did nothing wrong. Yeah. Because even though NXIVM as an organization has utterly crumbled, there are a handful, I don't know how many, but there are still a couple people that believe that Keith has done nothing wrong. And that
the NXIVM 5? Or they were talked about on the series, right? It's a handful.
It's a couple people. And they feel that there were real flaws in the government's case and that it'll be overturned and XYZ, which, you know, misses the forest from the trees, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, not to say that it's not important if there were flaws in the case, but like it's... We're missing the
there are not
here.
But
there could have been flaws, but the overwhelming evidence is way more than the flaws.
Well, it was wild to me that his argument was like, yes, we had this sexual coercion, but there wasn't money. And it's like, there doesn't have to be money.
Or
like,
even
his
that
whole
it wasn't
appeal.
Underage. And then like part of the core argument is I think that it's like one of the whatever. It's like, oh, she was 16, not 15. It's like, okay.
Yeah. Wrong. Yeah.
We're splitting hairs on this. Like yeah, I. Yeah, so anyway, no. Yes, that's what I mean about missing the forest from the trees.
Well, I hope. Well, those women sound like they aren't completely deprogrammed, and they're still have a foot in the door. Do you? You've been very honest with us, which I appreciate. Do you honestly believe that Allison is completely deprogrammed?
What do you mean by that? Because if you mean has she completely renounced Keith, yes, I think that is true. Has she completely done away and made her mind whole in the way that Nexium is no longer a part of it? Probably no, because it's deprogramming is such a long process and it's work, you know, like it's mental work. And I think like even in my conversations with her, you know, she kind of said like there would be, and this is part of what made me trust her, because there would be things where I'd say something and she'd be like, oh, my gut reaction, like the Nexium voice is kicking in and saying, no, that wasn't what we were doing. But then like real me, present me is saying like, no, that yes, that you're right, blah, blah, blah. And it's like that I can't blame her for that. Like it takes a long time to rejigger your thinking. Like that takes a long, long time. And I mean, I think that's one of the things that is most interesting to me about where Allison is now. And that is that she's married to somebody who is a former neo-Nazi. So she's married to somebody else who is a convicted felon, like went to prison, and also deprogrammed from essentially a high control group. Yeah. Like the neo-Nazi movement is a high control group in some ways. And so he understands how difficult it is to get out of that thinking and how difficult it is, how much of a process it is. Even if you're like, I think emotionally she's like fully done out, hates Keith, et cetera, et cetera. But your mind takes so long to reform and shape and make all those mixing metaphors, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. Just it's not the first thought you have isn't
the program
through the lens of Nexium. Yeah, and you can let your own voice speak, but it's that catching yourself. Yeah.
There's something so beautiful about their marriage. Yeah. Because they have that shared history that who else is going to understand what it's like to have been in a high control group, but someone else in a high control group.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she talks about it with, you know, when I met them, they like told me this first story, and then I had them both tell me it again on the record. But one of their very first fights, I think their very first fight was over a donut, because Frank came home and he had a donut, and I think he'd already had one, and he'd previously said to Allison, you know, I'm trying to eat less sugar, blah blah blah, something like that. I'm trying to watch what I eat, blah blah blah. And so when Allison saw him with the donut, she like flipped out and was like, "What are you doing with this donut?" And he was like, "It's a donut." And she was like, "No, it's not." And in her, he's like, "It's just a donut." And she's like, "No, it's not." Because in her brain, she's seeing what the donut represents and what it would have represented in DOS, which was, this is 500 calories. This is disrespect. This is not taking your health seriously. This is not keeping your commitments. This is failure on a personal level, blah, 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 blah. And her husband was just like, this isn't a relapse. Like, this isn't drugs. It's a fucking jelly donut.
Yeah.
I'm going to eat it. You can't tell me what to eat, basically. And she had to really sit with like, why the fuck did I freak out over a jelly donut? Like, it's just a jelly donut. And since then, you know, she reflected on it extensively. They worked through it, whatever. I mean, they got a picture of a jelly donut now in their apartment, they told me, which I was like, right, like that, you know,
it's a good reminder of like
sometimes it's
never
just
about the jelly donut. Yeah, there's always way more layers to it than
I mean, and it's like, you know, it's a funny little story, because of course any of us in relationships, like we all have those, you all have those fights over a thing that isn't about the thing.
Sure.
But I think I find that so representative for just where she's at in terms of still coming out of DOS, you know, and still coming out of Nexium and Keith's brain control, and really understanding that it is a process and she'll probably be unraveling it for the rest of her life.
It kind of seeps out of you at unexpected moments, I bet, too. What do you ultimately hope listeners walk away questioning about themselves after hearing this series?
Oh, boy. That's a big question. you know, I hope listeners walk away with this sounds so lofty. Now I feel like I'm going to sound silly, but just a little more compassion for themselves and for other people, you know? Like, mm-hmm. I think a little more understanding that possibly we all will cause harm at a certain point. Like, not to the extent that Allison does, for sure, you know, most likely, hopefully not. Not to a criminal extent, but like, we're probably all gonna hurt someone. And whether we break their heart, whether we say something mean to our kid that we don't remember, but then they hold against us for 20 years or whatever it is. And really trying to accept that and face that and obviously try to prevent it. But if you do hurt somebody or cause harm, like, try to apologize, try to really be remorseful, try to really make up for the wrong that you've done. That's what I hope people take from it. But yeah, just also an understanding that we all have, I think, a lot of this all within us, you know?
Yeah.
Even if we don't want to think that we do, I think that we do.
Yeah. We're all human and we're exactly. all connected in way more ways than we think.
And that is the good and the bad, you know? It's all of it.
We talk a lot about the power of storytelling on our show and how somebody hearing her story now, this will resonate with them and perhaps give them more compassion over, I shouldn't be so judgmental of people that fall into these cults because it's a lot more complicated than I thought. Yeah. And, you know, walk away with a better understanding and more compassion. That's what we always strive for in our show. So I don't think it's corny at all that's what you hope for.
No, thank you. And I, you know, I guess the other thing I want to say is like, this is a little out there, but like, we are in such a time where so much of our thinking is moderated by algorithms where yes. things are either it's on or off. It's the most extreme perspective is the one that is rewarded socially on these algorithms. And that is extreme positive or extreme negative. And I just like really resent that and push against that yes. from a storytelling perspective, because yeah. that's just not life. Like, that's yeah. not reality. Like, it's gray area. There is nuance. And we know this because we live life. And I think it's yes. very important to bring some of that back when we are in a way where so much of our stuff is modulated through these timelines and through these algorithms mm-hmm. that promote most extreme views. And also, like, culturally, that's also where we're at, so divided.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Anyway, that's my little soapbox, and I'll get it. Off it now.
I love it. Tell us what you're working on next.
Oh, goodness. I'm working on taking a really big vacation.
Good yeah. for you. Good for you. You deserve it.
And then, yes. And then I will have, I have my weekly podcast, a show called Infamous, that I co-host with Vanessa Gregoriadis. It's all about different scandals and different fun topics that we're talking about at dinner parties lately. And we speak to a lot of journalists and talk about how they got those stories on that show. And then, yeah, more to come in the future. But if people want to follow me, they can find me on Instagram at NatRobe. That's NatRobe. And go listen to Allison After Nexium, wherever you Definitely. Get podcasts.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Natalie. Thank you so much for joining us today. You brought so much depth and compassion to this story, and that's what we try to do on the show as well. So we are honored to have you and honored to have listened to one of the most thoughtful, nuanced explorations of one of the largest cult cases probably of our generation. So everybody,
You're too Allison, kind. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Allison After Nexium is out now. Go listen to all 7 episodes on CBC's Uncover feed. You can listen on YouTube, wherever you get your podcasts. We put a link in the show notes, so it'll be real easy, and check it out. Support Natalie's incredible reporting, Infamous with Vanessa Gregoriadis, and let us know your thoughts in the comments, because we want to get out of those algorithms where it's either yeah. all good or all bad, and it depends, right? So thank you for letting us explore the gray area yes. with you today.
Thank you so much. This has been a delight to talk with you. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Sinisterhood.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.